Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. In this episode, we welcome in Michael Hegarty. Michael is an ordinary man who hailed from an Irish farming background with an extraordinary belief within him. After a successful 20-year banking career, Michael went from career and income-ending uncertainty to find his purpose building his bespoke leadership coaching business around his unique gift to see the greatness in others. The challenge of pursuing this massive career change was met whilst leading his family, including four kids of school-going age. An obsessive drive seeking to understand the deeper essence that is the human capacity to succeed has seen Michael work directly with some of the best coaches on the planet. Going beyond the old lone wolfing male mindset, he has created his own inner circle of trusted individuals and coach peers and a mastermind group to support him in his quest. He works with exceptional clients ranging from senior executive officers and directors to entrepreneurs and purpose-driven people to support them create their impossible. An emerging thought leader in the coaching world, Michael has already been published with opinion articles in magazines, spoken on stage, and co-authored his first book, Winner's Mindset, on the Amazon booksellers list. Michael likes nothing better than the solitude of being among his animals on his farm with his children, walking in a forest, or getting out for a cycle with his wife. So, Michael Hegarty, brother, it's an honor and a privilege to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on, brother.
Likewise, Mark. It's great to be here. Thanks very much for the invite.
Michael, we were having such a laugh. We were actually rolling around. Well, I was rolling around the place this side. We're recording on Zoom. I didn't have the visual on you just for connection reasons. While we were laughing about Michael, I really wanted to just start with that, the naturalness of it. What we were talking about just off recording was the human nature of us men. You know, Michael, can you just share a little bit of just like your human experience? This is, by the way, hats off to Michael here. It's his first podcast recording. And what I'm calling on Michael is just to speak to the human experience of that. But just off recording, I was recounting with Michael, like I've had a multitude of human experiences of like anxiety and fears and This is my first podcast. And then there was other podcasts, et cetera, et cetera. Would you mind just taking us in to your human experience leading up to this? And the context for me, Michael, is this is what masculine like practice is about. You know, every man listening in, it's like we have these situations. Conversation with a wife. For you today, it's a podcast. You know, it's a parenting issue with a kid that just isn't respecting his mom or the rules of the house. Yeah. There's major financials. Like life as a husband there's a litany of challenges set before us. But the challenge is, can we meet that challenge? Can we meet the fears that come up? And can we work through it? So just a little bit of context there. I think there's gold in you sharing your experience.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And you know, I suppose I'm a bit like everybody else. I like things a certain way, Mark. And I have my setup, the same as you have your setup on your side, my professional setup. And in the last couple of days, it was upset a little by, you know, I added a new microphone to the setup, and you're always conscious, is the sound proper and the whole lot. So, you know, I was aware I was coming on to do this podcast today, and I spent the whole morning getting it just right. And what happened was bizarre, because I was going to, in the last 15 minutes, 20 minutes before we got together, I was going to, you know, have a little bit of quiet time. I do a small bit of meditation just to calm myself down, get into the zone. Even when I'm meeting one-to-one clients, I'll always get into the zone before I go live with them. And about 12 minutes out, Mark, I got my whole head got bunged up, which sinus, and it very, very seldom happens, but it caught me unawares, and at the moment I panicked a little. I said, "Oh my God, how am I going to do a podcast this way?" And then I caught it. I said, "This is the situation. This is me hyperventilating, getting a little anxious in the moment." And once I caught it, then I knew what it was. I went into my meditation and I calmed myself down. I calmed my breathing down. I have a Buteyko meditation that I do every day for my asthma. And that took me back out and cleared my head almost, you know, 5-7 minutes, with the result that I was able to press the button and come on the Zoom with 2 minutes to spare. But it was that awareness. You know, I've spent years building that awareness, and it's very nice when you can catch it. You'd be aware of it, Mark. When you can catch it in the moment, then you can do something about it.
Yeah, I love that you're honing in on awareness. Like, that's such a potent place of, it's the single foundation stone for all personal growth. Like, within the context here at, you know, Be the Husband She Brags About, it's all, you know, focus on to become the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. But like any of that transformation, you cannot take a step consciously forward towards any progress in your own world, you know, in your relationships, in your relationship to money, career, parenting, anything, without awareness. It's like, am I aware? You know, when I hear that story, Michael, oh man, I was sharing off screen, I'm off recording with you, it's like, definitely in the beginning, I still get jitters. I have exact rituals to get myself into that performance state that I bring my highest self forward, and I have a ritual at the end that I don't bring anxiety and self-doubt into my day. So I really have to work firsthand. I spoke with this on the podcast and other episodes. But that point of awareness, there's nothing good that you can do. And I think guys do get aware. But this is why I brought it. It's like that awareness that you can work with it, you know, that your response is, okay, awareness. But it's pretty freaking disconcerting for a guy to be, oh, I'm aware, I'm anxious, but I don't have the tools to impact that. I think that's the miss that most guys have, and where we sort of negate our awareness.
As well as that, Mark, a lot of people think that when I become aware, I you know, when something happens, I can fix it. But, you know, becoming aware isn't a fixing agent. It's just a change in state. And with that, then you can take a different action. When you become aware of something, you can stop and pause and realize that, all right, okay, what's the active agent here? And you can then take different actions towards the outcome. For instance, one of the actions that I would have taken was to consciously let myself know that I might be going on this podcast bunged up, you know, and well, the thing to do there is to call it out to Mark at the head of the podcast, and we make a decision then, do we go ahead with this? But to continue to panic and be unaware of it, you know, you're taking actions for the wrong reasons at that point. But I think one of the things for me with awareness is, we're never going to be perfect. We're never going to get in control of a situation. And it's that acceptance that goes alongside of awareness that is a game changer. If we can accept that we're in a situation, whatever that situation is, well, then let's just go with the flow. What happens from here on?
Yeah, I love that. I'd right off the back of that. And I knew this was going to happen with you, Michael. It was like, it didn't matter like what psychosomatically was coming up. It's like, once Michael and Mark get going, we're going to go to the depths of the universe. So it's like, we're just a few minutes in, and I'm just enjoying, we're already going into the depths of it. I'm loving
I love your confidence, Mark.
It's called conscious self-delusion. it's my number one.
Our optimism bias, I think, is another one.
Yeah. The awareness and like what you're saying there, like what I'm hearing in that is there's the situational awareness. There's an awareness. Hey, you know, in a few minutes, in 12 minutes, 10 minutes, okay, there's 2 minutes to go. I'm on this conversation. So there's the awareness of what's happening in your body, in your nervous system. And then there's this putting your attention on, well, okay, what's the eventuality? It's bringing a sense of control in an unfoldment, which is the dichotomy. It's like you, on one level, we don't have control of what's happening to us, but there's another level of, hey, well, I can just speak to Mark and speak it out. One thing I work with guys, and like, this is why I slow down and said, oh, there's juice in two men speaking consciously to this human experience, is, you know, nearly every guy I work with, Michael, every guy, actually, I'm just going to say, you know, anxiety with their wives, anxiety, fears, self-doubt, you know, always wanting to have this sort of portrayal of, you know, I'm confident, I've got my shit together. Yet, I talk it about the dirty plate metaphor, which is, you know, you can serve a 5-star, can like from the head chef of the Ritz in Paris or, you know, wherever, like you have 5-star meal, but if it's served on a plate that's dirty, now I mean really dirty, that meal is destroyed. And it's this thing of, as men, like what I witness in you and in this, in how you navigated that, was the willingness that, hey, number one, let's try and bring it under control. And you did, masterfully, incredible self-mastery, did your breath meditation, got your nervous system back, calm, relax, and the conversation is going forward. But the willingness that, well, if you can't do that, you'd accept yourself, love yourself enough to go, well, let's just get on with Mark and go, can we go on with this conversation anyway? And with that, like, I know, I you know, if the conversation goes from there, that's the gift of deep intimacy into me, you see. It's like, and when you do that, I'm really wanting guys listening in to just witness the beautiful mastery in this. It's like Michael's willingness to just go, well, I'd be willing to just let Mark into my human experience, and then we make a decision. And if we did, if you were gunked up a bit, we could have made the decision and we would have just went, hey, this is, we'd be having the same conversation, but Michael's a bit gunked up. We're having the experience anyway. And it's inviting people into, I'm simply having a human experience here. There's anxiety. I'm simply having a human experience. For me, Michael, you know, we've spoke before of asthma, tightening up my throat. You'll hear me starting to cough, you know, when I have unchecked stuff. When I speak that out, the coughing stops within a few minutes because I've owned it, and from that awareness. So there's just a lot of beauty here that I think guys can tap into in just witnessing vicariously a man in his full authentic power, just dealing with shit that comes up in his nervous system and just getting on with it anyway.
Yeah. And I think the last thing to say on it, Mark, is that the practice is not to eliminate these things, but to become more aware, of it quicker. So, you know, we live in a world of perfectionism, and you know, I was trying to get my, as I said earlier, my desk and my professional setup perfect. But you know, when you go to the inside, when you go to your inside, it's not about that perfection. It's about, you know, the practice of staying with it and catching it a little earlier each time. So, you know, today I was able to catch it almost on cue within a couple of minutes of it happening. You know, a couple of years ago, I might have gone through the whole podcast and come out the other end and then realize, oh my God, that's what it was. You know, so I think particularly with meditation and breathing practice and all of that, we think that once we start that, we should get a solution. But the practice is more about catching it earlier, and as we catch it earlier, we can deal with it quicker, and we can then start to make different decisions, and our world starts to change quicker around us as a consequence.
Michael, writing off the awareness of catching something in time, I think we're talking there about like clock time, you know, a very short period of time, but a particular part of your life story that I'm really curious to know more, and just invite guys listening in on that story, is where you became aware of there was some purpose inside of you beyond the beautiful long-term successful career that you'd carved out in the banking industry. What I'm curious about, well, first of all, could you invite us into that story as to what the process of becoming aware of this other purpose was? What did that look like? Was it like a sudden eureka moment in the bat? I've got it, you know, I want a career as a coach. Or was it a slow but sure process of coming to step into, you know, your authentic truth and live a more purpose-lived career?
I'm chuckling away here, Mark. It's a great question. And I'm going to pause for a second just to see where I come at it from, because it forms a big part of my life even now. You know, this whole idea of purpose and what we're about. I think what immediately came to me as you were asking the question, Mark, was it wasn't something that just sprang upon me. As a youngster, this might sound a little odd, but I seem to inhabit two worlds. I inhabited the outside world and I inhabited a world within myself. And the world within myself, I was asking a lot of questions. And if I'm being honest, I wasn't getting a lot of answers for a long time. And the world outside was a scary world when I was a child, for me. And, you know, I came from a large family. There was eight of us. I'm the eldest of eight. My dad is a farmer. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And they were hard workers, and we all helped out on the farm. But when I went to school, I found, at five-year-old, school a scary experience. So the way I kind of phrase it is, I spent my whole life since 5 year old trying to get back into the bosom of my family, you know, going back to that secure place. But I always moved along. When the opportunities came up, I always took them. And that's probably the paradox in my whole story. I always moved on, despite in my own mind not moving at all. I been stuck in a story. But when I joined the bank, initially I was joining short term. I was going to do about 5 years. And then the career took off, and I ended up doing 20 years. But to make a long story short, I always wanted to set up my own business. I had this dream. I wanted to set up my own business. And I believed that I had something greater within me. I can't explain that or where it comes from, but I always had this feeling within me. And in 2006, as a matter of just as a coincidence, I very near left the bank. I had spent months and months researching an opportunity to buy a business. And on the eve of signing on the dotted line, I pulled back because the way I rationalized it at the time was I was after getting married. I was after buying a house, probably at the top end of the market. And I had started a family, and I had a pretty good career at the time. And to this day, Mark, because we all know now what happened 2008 and onwards, the financial collapse came, and personally, myself and my wife, we went through a family bereavement. We lost one of our children, but despite all of that, despite all that has happened, the one thing I have regretted for years since is not taking the jump that time to leave the bank and start my own business. Probably would have failed, you know, with all that happened, but it was the act of not taking that. So in 2017, when I got the chance to leave again, it was a very quick conversation. There was a redundancy package being offered by the bank, and I was outside the scope of it. And I said to myself, if I had been in the scope, within the scope of that redundancy package, I would have given it a lot of thought. And it's as if karma or whatever you like to call it, hit. The following Monday morning, I went into the office and there was an email came from HR and they had revised the parameters of that redundancy package, which brought me within the scope of it. And I went home to my wife, Maura, at the time, or Maura, still Maura. And I said to her one sentence, I told her, I says, there's a redundancy package. I'm thinking of taking it. What do you think? And without stopping what she was doing, she says, well, something to the lines of, well, if you think it's for you, go for it. And you know as well as I know, Mark, when your wife is telling you to get back in your place, and you know when your wife is telling you, yeah, I support you 100%. There was nothing else needed to be said.
Yeah, I think every man listening in knows that line pretty damn well. They don't tend to mix their words when they're drawing a line, you know, what they really approve of and not. So you were met with an open-hearted nervous system saying, hey, if you're feeling it, go for it.
And Mark, that was a very powerful moment. I felt that moment in that moment, even though we were busy people, we had two careers, we had a young family, the whole lot. I felt that moment. I realized the significance of that moment. She was backing me 100%. Even though I was afraid, because I was afraid of what the future would bring. It's beside the point, but she was after starting a 3-year career break herself. So I was the sole breadwinner at that stage. And here I was saying to her, I think I'll take redundancy from the bank. I didn't know what I was going to do the next day afterwards. Okay. You know, never mind set up a business or start a new career. I was leaving one career. I was the breadwinner. And she still said that. So that was a big boost to me. That's the origins of it, Mark.
And obviously, you know, guys with the bio on that, they've got there, and I've personally had a beautiful friendship and working with you. You've transitioned to your powerful coaching career, now well established. What was your process from the rawness of answering this lifelong awareness? There's something greater in you, which, by the way, you know, so many guys that are listening in and guys that I end up getting to work with one-on-one in marriage, that they come with marriage difficulties, but actually the one elephant in the room that's gnawing away at them and actually is gnawing away at their marriage, how they're able to show up as man, is they've got this dream. They've got this, there's something bigger for me to do. Not bigger, that's it better, but it's like bigger because it's following their heart and they're not pursuing it. And it's like dampening them down. So it's like you're such an exemplar of that process for guys. So Michael, what was your process from going from that raw awareness? There's the opportunity, an awareness of I'd go with something different. Boom, Monday morning, it's available to me. You go home, you're just knocking the dominoes over as they come up. You're like, you speak it to your queen. She's like, next sacred domino, I'll support you if it's for you, but you don't know what yet. You just know that you want to do it.
I'm again laughing at the word you're using, Mark. You're using process.
Retrospectively, I suppose.
Yes.
Retrospectively.
You know, it's brilliant. And, you know, what I've learned over the years is it's lovely to look back, and you can build a narrative then looking back.
I don't know how you and by extension guys listening in, there's one, I think it's part of the TED Talks, but it wasn't actually a formal TED Talk. There's the Steve Jobs graduation ceremony speech, which like the golden thread of what he's talking about. He talks about all different experiences in his life where it's like he had no process. But what emerged as his process was, guys, everything lines up as you look back in your life. Trust that moment is true. And it was beautiful because it's like, it's sort of like, it describes perfectly your thing. In that moment, there's no seeming rational process, but the process is just trust the gut and go with it. Retrospectively looking back, if you could put a process, maybe it was like, was the process just, you know, it's like,
well,
in horror.
Here's a couple of things I learned, Mark, and it feeds directly into that point. The first was when I did resign the bank, when I did finish, you know, I was within weeks of a 20-year career in the bank, and that was the first shocker for me to be able to say, or to be saying to people, yeah, I did 20 years in the bank. You know, that was a new narrative to me, because I'd never thought of it as that length of a career, you know, when I was there. So that was the first shocker. But the thing that came to me when I, you know, walked out, the other shocker for me was the next day I didn't automatically put on my suit. The bank seemed to almost drain away from my persona even. And I was, I don't know whether I was disappointed with that or what, but the one of the messages that I took out of it was that the bank wasn't me. You know, it was somewhere I went to and it was a job I did, but it wasn't me. I didn't have that urge or that impulse to put on the suit the next day and show up as a banker. And, you know, take what you will out of that, but it gave me pause for thought. The other thing that came up was, because my wife had taken a 3-year career break, I took it upon myself that I had to replace that income and replace it quickly. Because even though you walk out and there was a redundancy package, and I knew it at the time, you know, if you say it'll last you X amount of time, it'll probably last you half that time. So I put pressure on myself to replace that income and replace it quick. So I started looking around and I had a few contacts, and I know I was, again, no more than 2006, I was a long way down the road in buying into another business. And on the eve of signing, and it's amazing when you put yourself in the position where you're ready to commit to something financially or otherwise, there's something powerful in that, because that is the space that you become clear about things. You know, when you're, for instance, committing money, you become very, very clear about a number of things very fast. And the thing I got clear about there was, what if I'm going down this road, down another rabbit hole, where I'm going into another career and in 6 months' time, I don't like this. I don't like what I'm doing. I'm at a point in my life where I can choose my direction now. I've spent years, you know, waiting for an opportunity to get out of a banking career that I didn't feel was for me. And now I could be going down another rabbit hole. So I pull back and I obviously talk to Maura, and Christmas was coming up at the time. And I give myself Christmas. I give myself about 2 months. And it says, I'm going to do nothing for these 2 months. I don't know where it came from, Mark, I'll be honest. But I said, I'm going to do absolutely nothing. I'm not going to research jobs. I'm not going to research anything. I'm just going to have this Christmas and early into New Year and see where it goes from there.
I just, you know what's coming up immediately there, which it's to acknowledge you for the courage to do so. Because I know in coaching and know my own career as well, it's like the courage that it takes as a man. And I know women experience the same thing as a man nowadays, to go, I'm going to gift myself this window of time. Like, one day to do that is a gift, but that you had the capacity to courageously go, hey, I don't have certainty, but I'm going to gift myself, you know, a few months where I'm just not going to do anything. And especially, you know, you introduced, like, you know, the farming background. I don't think it's part of, like, you know, the farming culture of Ireland from the farmers I know. I've never.
You're exactly right, Mark, and it's very well picked up, because I came from a family of workers and hard workers. My dad is 86 years of age, and he's still an active farmer today, you know, and I have two brothers full time farming, and they work incredibly hard. I wouldn't say there's anybody that can work and manage what they're managing in the country, And I'm not saying that with an ego head here. I came from that background. I came from that culture, that farming, you know, the farming mentality. You work hard. But something was telling me even back then that working hard isn't necessarily the way forward. And I can't say what it was, but I give myself that permission, and it wasn't easy. But you know something, it was probably one of the best things I did, because somewhere along the line between, you know, Christmas and the new year, coaching started to come into it. And I had no experience of coaching prior to that. I had researched, I think it was strategic coach, but I would see with strategic coach as more of a business model than a coaching model. And coaching started to come into it some way. And I remember my wife going on the computer one day, and she started to look up coaching courses, and one of them showed up, and we gave it a ring. We rang the number, and the girl on the other side said, "Well, as it so happens, the director of the college is going to be in Galway on Saturday." This was Thursday. She's going to be in Galway on Saturday, if you'd like to meet her. And the decision was made there and then. Yes, we'll meet her. So we lived in Galway for 4 years, Mark, when back in the early noughties. And so any time you get a chance to go to Galway was a family day out. And the whole family was put into the car on Saturday, and off we went to Galway. And the plan was that Maura would and the children would bring me up to the door of the hotel, and then they'd go off into the city. But lo and behold, when we went up to the door, the children wanted to knock. And the director opened the door. And what did she do? Well, invite the whole family into the room.
And oh, man, this is just pitched beautifully. Tell us more.
Yeah. And I was, you know, the dad and the professional within me, the banker was coming out a little more. I was saying, oh, my God, you know, this isn't working out according to plan. But I went with it, and we went in and we sat down and we had the most wonderful conversation. She was the most warm, receiving person. Paula King is her name. And that's what sold me to coaching. After that conversation, I was sold. I seen something different in that woman. I seen, you know, something warm, special, where, you know, a bit like what we were doing earlier. She was able to let go of all the inconsistencies, all the disturbances, all the, you know, the control of the whole lot, and just go with what was there. And she received a whole lot of us into that room, and we talked for, I don't know, an hour and a half, and that sold me to coaching. So that's actually how I transitioned from banking to coaching. That's how bizarre it was, Mark, for the want of a better word. It wasn't planned. But what I took up from it afterwards, much after, this is looking back on the narrative, was that's the way it was meant to be. I there was no way I could know that, you know, I'm not a banker, I'm a coach, because I didn't know anything about coaching. And I think that's the piece that people miss. They go to their knowledge base and they say, well, I know about this and I know about this, so my zone of genius must be somewhere in there. But, you know, how does anything new, you know, you talked about Steve Jobs earlier, how does anything new get created if we go to that space of pure knowledge?
Yeah.
So
I
go ahead.
There's some, I'm taking notes here, Michael, and knowing you as long as I do, and in a deeply intimate manner, but it's like just so beautiful to see the tapestry, you know, of that journey. Definitely I'm bringing, I think, a greater awareness with the work I've done personally in recent years. But like what's jumping out at me is, amongst many, many different points, so I'm not essentializing it down to three, saying there's not other wisdom bombs in there. But like, number one, when you said, hey, the regret you had, the act of not taking action, that initial first business, there just was this lingering regret of, you know, what that could have been, and that you didn't, you know, just grab that by the scruff of the neck. That just reminds me of the hospice movement. There's been so much research done where the number one regret of people is what they have not done. It's rarely, rarely ever what they did do. It's the opportunity.
Sorry to cut you, Mark. That goes to the heart of it. I never saw myself as a doer. I saw myself as a dreamer. And I think, you know, I haven't thought this through, but there was something in that at some point I have to stop being the dreamer, or I have to start being a doer. Maybe not stop being the dreamer, but start being the doer. Because everybody, you know, if you read biographies, even historical biographies, the people always did something. You know, they took action. And some of the cliches in this world that we live in of social media, it talks about, oh, take action and you know, commit to something and all of that. Yeah, that's all right and fine. But you know, when you go out into the real world, what does that look like? Do you just transform your world? How do you transform your world? You know, what does it actually look like? And I think that's where a lot of people get caught up in that whole psychological question.
Yeah, I love that. That was actually one of the second points, but you've very eloquently brought in is the action, the dreamer to doer. That part, so the regret of not acting, and you shifted in the discomfort of that from shift from dreamer to doer. And like the other part was the permission. You gave yourself permission to lean into it, the permission to reflect, the permission to, well, let's just have that domino speak it to my queen. Let's just have myself the permission to read that email and, you know, feel into that. And all of these dominoes, the permission to go, okay, you know, Paulie King is there, Galway and Seller. Let's the permission to reflect and go for it. I love this, and it's such a exquisite example, because there's that part where you said that initial business, and obviously it wasn't meant to be, but it's just that way of thinking. And it's representative, Michael, of so many guys. So many men do have those dreams. And there's this suffocating bind where we rationalize, oh, but I'm married. Oh, but the repayments. And this is not, I'm not downplaying the significance. Being married, you know, responsibilities of income and protection of family and making sure everybody does it in a safe, beautiful way. We do have more as husbands, definitely, if there's kids in the scene. So it's not to downplay it. But predominantly, that's like the number one reason why most husbands don't pull the trigger and going for their dream. Which I remember reading David Aida, The Way of the Superior Man. It's one of those classic men's work books. I remember, to be honest, I remember fucking hating Daida. I've shared this on this, because he was like, who's this? And I didn't have choice words at the time. And it was like, who's this dude? Like, I remember Googling David Aida. Is he married? Like, he's talking all this shit, and he's like putting all this high, you know, superior man bullshit my way. But it's like, does he know what it is to be a married man? I ended up like bursting out laughing 10 minutes later when I was trying to assassinate David Aida's personhood online, where it's like, no, he's not married. It didn't matter. One of the things that really irritated me and triggered me, obviously a ton of persona at the time and excuse making was being revealed. Hence, it was so uncomfortable. One of the most uncomfortable parts of that book was there's a segment, Michael, on never a superior man never uses his wife and kids as an excuse not to act on his truth. And that infuriated me at the time. Obviously, because at that time, I was still in physio. At that time, I wasn't acting on my potential. That part of you, that there's something greater. Man, I had that. So I really just wanted to highlight that, you know, the wisdom of Daida. My struggle with that exact same point, and I'm now many years later going with it. But yeah, just loving your intimate portrayal and invitation into your retrospective process.
But it's a great point, Mark, and you and I know, as a coach, when we coach people, we're being coached ourselves. It's not one way traffic. And one of the things I remember coaching a guy, he's still a client actually, but in the early days, like this guy is involved in, you know, deals that run into the hundreds of millions. Like this guy is in a whole different world than me. But he was in agony one day, is the only way to describe it, during one of our calls, about how he was treating his wife, you know, how he'd let her down because he was so consumed in his work. And his work is more, you could describe it as mission work. You know, he was on purpose, and I should say is on purpose. But he was so distraught about how he was treating his wife. And I asked him the question. I says, you know, well, I didn't. I said to him, you know, your wife is no fool. And he stopped talking for a moment, and he just stopped. And I said to him, your wife is a very capable person. She's no fool. Because I was thinking of my wife. My wife is so far ahead of me, Mark. You know, I remember I was diagnosed with an ailment years and years ago. She had seen it coming. It had gone over my head. You know, our wives are so powerful. They're no fools. They know. They know what they're getting into. They see the potential, or they see the greatness within their partners, or else they'd call it out and they'd say, you're being foolish doing this. You know, you need to get a job. But with my client, his wife wasn't tolerating him. His wife was backing him because she could see what he was capable of doing. And she was quite happy to be in the background. She didn't want the limelight, as does my wife. My wife doesn't want the limelight, you know? And we forget that. We think that we're taking care of our wives and we're the breadwinners, because that's how generations in the past were the actual breadwinners. But no. I remember reading somewhere where, you know, they talked about is it the male or the female that's the dominant person in the reproductive cycle? And, you know, us men, we all think it's us. So should we go out and we get our woman? No. You know, and I remember reading somewhere where, you know, they've gone back through the ages and they've shown it, and they've proven it, that it's actually the woman. You know, if we go to the raw, responsibility for making sure that the species lives on, it's actually the female.
Yeah, I love you bringing in the sacred masculine and feminine dance of the importance of women, because it shows up in my work with guys, Michael. That exact misunderstanding is we've had so much conditioning that women are second rate citizens, and you know, I without apology, I bring in organized religion across many different religions. It's like male is representation, and women can sort of, you know, they're tag-alongs ultimately. When if you go far enough back, it's actually there were feminine god figures. Actually, if you go in history, and there's tons of historical findings that show that the original teams of archaeologists that went out, they were reading these ancient texts and were seeing, oh, a female godhead, she, her, you know, it's like, and they just changed, they changed the pronoun, him. Historically, they just went, okay, we'll just put that as him, which over the millennia brought the sacredness, where if you go into men's work, like just writing off the back of the inspiration of where you're going, Michael, you know, the warriors in indigenous tribes, they would, you know, the defense of the women was not because they're weak. You know, it's this story, not because they're weak, it's because they're so profoundly precious. The male, the masculine heart, the training was a readiness to sacrifice your life in a heartbeat if it meant defending the women and the children. Not because they're weak, it's because it's the highest, is the highest devotional loving gift from a male like in society to go, I'll protect the next generation. I will protect the feminine wisdom. So maybe a little bit off core, but just writing off that, like so sacredly important. I love your maybe counterintuitive to the modern story of women are profoundly powerful and we need to reorient and bring that conversation up. So thanks for bringing that up, Michael.
Well, and thanks for your more articulate continuation of that story, because it is so important. But, you know, sometimes we, you know, and I fell into this trap where, you know, I felt I had to be the breadwinner and I went down that road. But two things I wanted to come back to. One was somewhere along the line when I started this journey of coaching, I read Jack Canfield's book, The Success Principles. And the very first principle, Mark, is take 100% for everything. Take 100% responsibility for everything in your life. And I remember reading that and reading through the following few pages and then just stopping and absorbing what that principle means. If you take that one principle and apply it to your life, everything changes. Straight away. The way you look at the world changes. Because now, you know, for me, I probably lived most of my life as a bit of a victim. But straight away, if you apply that principle, you flip it. There is no victim. There is no reason, you know, if it rains, well, so be it. It's raining. What does that mean? You know, if someone does something as slight to you, well, somebody did a slight to you. What does that mean? You start to re-narrate everything in your life. And that had a profound influence on me as well. Because now at this, I suppose, seminal part of my life, I had just broken the chain of one career. And I had taken this time now to reflect. And I had noticed in the power of taking the time wasn't the actual taking the time. The power was actually becoming aware. And we spoke about this earlier on in the conversation. Actually being aware that this was an important time in my life. This was a very important juncture. And this was going to influence how I move forward. I still didn't know where I was going to go or what I was going to do. But just realizing, oh, this is an important thing I have to do. So things... It's almost like when you let go, Mark, things start to happen around you. And if you're able to notice a few things that's happening and latch on to them and go with them without guilt or, impatience or all them loaded words that we put on them. If you're able to just go with them for the sake of going with them and see where they take you, well, then that's a lovely journey. Because they will take you somewhere.
I'm going back to previous wisdom of yours in this conversation, like where you put yourself in a position and you were ready to commit. What I'm feeling in your words here is that commitment, like the genius of commitment, where you said earlier, it was like when you're ready to commit, go all in with your money. It's like radical clarity comes. It's like your nervous system gets super aware. Again, awareness gets super aware of, okay, what's really important here? What has been the role of commitment in your capacity to go from those early, fuzzy, total lack of clarity days, just knowing there's a dream there, to recognizing in that beautiful conversation with your family in Galway, yeah, coaching is it, to, you know, a good number of years later, you're still in the game. Your business organism as a professional coach is ongoing. Clearly, you've encountered, you know, like any entrepreneur, the startup of a business, many different obstacles, perceived obstacles, economic changes, family changes, self-doubt, et cetera, et cetera. You've answered all of those clearly because you're still in the game. What role has commitment played for you, Michael?
I'm going to answer that question in two parts, Mark. But before I do, I love the way you've said that. You're still in the game. There's the stock market crash there in 2008, or the financial crash of 2008. It kind of, I remember thinking, you know, when a stock drops, you know, you have invested in a stock at a level. Many people think that they've taken the loss, you know, oh, I've taken the loss on that. If you haven't sold out that stock and it hasn't gone to zero and you know, the business behind it gone bankrupt, you're still in the game. It's when you crystallize, when you actually cash in your shares, that's when you know whether you have a loss or a gain. And it's the same in life. We're still in the game. I'm not sure whether I've lost or won at this point, at this juncture. But one of the things that I took on when I went into coaching was, it wasn't a one-year game. It was a 20-year game. Where will I be in 20 years' time? And I started to actually think that. Where will I be in 10 years' time? Where will I be in 20 years' time? If I pursue this every single day for the next 20 years, where will I be? And that really excited me. But I just wanted to drop that in. But the commitment thing, Mark, if I'm absolutely truthful, commitment frightens the bejesus out of me.
You're one of the most honest guests I've ever had on with just that one big juicy clanger. I love it.
Well, before you call out to this podcast, please let me explain. I said earlier, Mark, I believed all my life that there was something bigger within me, that there's something big within me, you know, I put on my website, I believe that we're infinitely capable. You know, we cannot get caught up for all sorts of reasons, and we don't need to get into it here and now. But, you know, that if we believe into that, well, then what you commit to is very important. And when are you actually committed? You know, when are you fully committed? I remember, I'm not sure that I do an article on it, but I remember talking a good bit to clients and anybody that would listen at the time. And you know, sometimes I write things myself just to put them on paper and get clarity around them, you know, see how they look on paper. But this idea of commitment and recommitting. Because if we commit to something that has never been done before, how do we know we're fully committed to that? That has never been done, because as it unfolds, you go into a space that you've never been or nobody else has ever been, you know. So I talked about that committing and then having to recommit again. But that whole act of commitment, if I commit to my full potential, if I commit to something, what does that actually mean? Well, for me, if I fully commit, it means that there is no family, there is no business, there is no winning and losing. It's gung-ho down the road after that. And wow, you know, that's scary. I'll tell you a very quick story, Mark, and forgive me if I'm hogging, but I remember in 2008, I was, you know, in banking, and up to 2008, our biggest challenge was getting enough money, you know, lent out. And then after 2008, we had to, you know, start to re-engage with all the big developers and the big borrowers. And I remember one of the first meetings we had was with one of the biggest borrowers in the west of the country. And myself and two other bankers, we were in a room with him. The four of us were having a chat. And it was just a chat. It was just an information gathering. The kind of the bottom had come out of the financial sector or was coming out of it. And we wanted to see where he was or what he was thinking. And we talked for an hour, an hour and a half. But one of the things he said to us, the first thing he said was, I'm going to put up my house, his home for sale. And he had a big plush home, a lovely home. And, you know, we looked at each other because normally that's the last thing that'll be put up because it's the hardest thing for a bank to go after. But this guy was putting it up, one of the first things. And we queried him on it. And he said something that I thought was absolutely brilliant. And it's true of most entrepreneurs. He said, I started off on a bicycle. And if it takes it to a bicycle, I will return. In other words, he had so much faith in himself that all the material assets and the material wealth he had didn't matter to him. He knew he could replace it again after this had passed. He knew it within himself. It wasn't important to him.
You know, that just moves me so deeply. You know, the context, you know, like when you said, I broke myself laughing, you know, with the commitment, the fear of commitment. I get that as a man. I really do. Mm. Boy, do I get it. Like the recommitting to marriage, breakdown, breakthrough is like, you know, am I doing this? Like that commitment, that spiritual commitment to this relationship, commitment to parenting, like that's every second of every day. I'm like that commitment has been challenged and business entrepreneurship. But to hear that level of surrendered confidence from a man that I know the landscape in Ireland at that time, you know, astounding amounts of wealth leading up to that, but to have that confidence as a man to go back to a bicycle, I'll go because that bike, you know, I can still go forward with a bike and just have that. It'll just be a simple one foot in front of the other. I'll come back. Wow. I'm like, you know, that level of unstoppability, you know, marriage transformation is easy when you have that level. It doesn't matter how stripped back I am, I can make a way forward. Deeply inspired. That's a beautiful story, Michael. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, and you know, it goes to the very heart of commitment, Mark. What are we, when we say we're committed to something, what does that actually mean? And it's sometimes a really good question to ask yourself. What does it mean to be committed? You know, in my case, I was going out starting a new career. I'm saying to myself, this is a 20-year career. Well, you know, if I was to lose my assets in the meantime, and I've a considerable amount of assets gathered up, but if I was to lose all them in pursuing this, am I willing to go there? You know, am I willing to, you know, case in point, am I willing to put my relationship with my wife and children in jeopardy to achieve this? And if the answer is yes, well, so be it. That's a level of commitment. But once we keep coming back to this thing of awareness. When you become aware of something, you know, it takes on a whole new persona. And when I became aware of what commitment actually meant, well, that's where it got scary. That's where it got really, really scary.
Michael, what I'm super curious in all of this is through all of this journey, and, you know, a lot of this is explicitly mission-oriented, realigning your career on point, on purpose, your authentic self, you know, manifesting that greatness that wanted to come true, that was your truth. Along that whole course, I don't want it to get lost because I know a lot of guys listening in is like, that's okay, but. And what follows that natural intuitive but, rightfully in most guys, is, but that's a really stressful journey to go through, from breadwinner, you know, successful career, you know, established career where, hey, there's money coming in, you know, kids going to college, food on the table, wife's career break, et cetera, et cetera. What my curiosity is, Michael, is what was the single greatest challenge that committing to that, following your purpose and truth, your authentic truth, aligning your career and your mission, what was the greatest challenge that brought up in your marriage? And how did you overcome that challenge?
I didn't.
take us deeper, because there could be a lot of juice in that answer.
No, I joke. Oh, that's a great question, Mark. What was the single biggest challenge? What's coming to me instinctively, and I haven't thought this through, is staying on point is what's coming to me naturally, staying true to myself. And so I say that in the context of a lot of what I was doing it on a gut feeling rather than experience. And something we haven't talked about today and probably don't need to in this context is I'm somebody that seems to need validation for what I do. And when I say validation, I don't mean accolades. I mean that if I see somebody else doing it, that gives me enormous confidence that I'm on the path. And when you go way off the path in doing something that not a lot of people are doing, finding that validation becomes harder and harder. And that's one of the things that I've struggled with, if I want to use that word. I have this, you know, as I said earlier, I have this feeling, I have this sense that I, you know, that there's infinite potential within me. And we've talked about commitment. I haven't been fully committed to it. I've been committed to an extent, and you know, I'm quite happy with that. I acknowledge that. But sometimes the scariest thing is, have you the courage to stay with it? You know, that question, have you the courage to stay with it despite all that comes at you, despite the fact that you go into a period of uncertainty around financials, despite the fact that everyone is saying to you, that's not the way to do it, this is the way to do it. You know, despite the fact that others around you seem to be having more success than you. And if I'm probably articulating this wrong, but the scariest and the hardest thing is to believe in yourself, or believe in myself, that what I'm doing is actually worthwhile. What I'm doing will come out the other end. And I've done a lot of reading, you know, over the last number of years. And I won't give you any quotes, but some of the books, you know, the validation is, well, you mightn't come out the other end. There might be no other side to this. You know, this isn't a movie or that has a happy ending. This is life. And yeah, that's quite scary, because I've put everything into this. I've put my reputation into it. I've stood out there and said, this is who I am, this is how I show up. I've gone against my roots, my farming roots to a large extent. I've asked my wife, my girlfriend, to follow me and trust in me, and obviously my family. And my son went off to third level college last year, and we had to find the money for that. And I've three more children coming hard and fast on his heels. And yeah, I'm quite happy to do it, but am I quite happy that my wife should be here along with me? Am I quite happy that my children should be here along with me as well? You know, there's more than just me there. So if I'm answering absolutely truthfully, Mark, that's the scariest thing.
I relate very personally with that. The staying on point. And, you know, that ultimate challenge is, you know, what you're saying is like to believe in yourself. Can you meet every single obstacle and stay on point believing in yourself? And I know it's like you bring your beautiful queen, and I love your story. It's like your beautiful wife, just like from the off, is like, hey, trust your gut. If that's where you're, if that's what it is telling you, just go with it. But then we become responsible. It's like, okay, I've got the trust. Now I'm responsible. Now I'm actually the dad. I'm the husband. I'm the, you know, there's an income coming in. A lot of families have two incomes, but hey, if that one income goes, I mean, that changes things a lot. I really get that. Like, there's times when I've tried many different things. I definitely leaned in way more. I was way more comfortable, or I learned to get comfortable very quick with the deep inner work. But it was like, yeah, that's cool, Mark, but you're not showing up as a businessman. I wasn't learning. I was avoiding a lot of that. So I had a number of the deepest challenging moments where it was when the business organism just wasn't going forward. And it's like my queen was looking at me and sort of saying supportive words, but with a question in her nervous system, sort of going, what's your response going to be now? Now, what I honor is I found there was a truth. There was always another part. I suppose that your beautiful word of like words is like this infinite capability inside. I always found an answer. But the challenge in that is like, will I always find the answer? Can I find what's going forward? Yet what I'm looking in you, Michael, is again, it's this raw, authentic vulnerability, sharing your underbelly. But clearly, you've stayed on point. You know, we're having this conversation because you've stayed on point. I know it's true for me as well. So again, it's this beautiful golden thread. We started with that. It's like, hey, be vulnerable. There's the truth of what our inner world experience is as men: anxiety, fear, self-doubt, and am I going to be able, you know, blah, blah, blah. But one foot after the other, just keep going. Make that next courageous decision and action, as you were saying, dreamer to doer. So it's...
Yeah, it's funny when we're thinking it's true in our mind, you have an outcome. But when you're living it in life, you know, there's seldom an actual outcome. It's just a continuation. Life continues on. And I think that's a distinction that becomes more and more relevant as you go on that journey, as you go further along that journey. You almost like, it's like when I was in the bank, you had goals. So when you had quarterly goals and annual goals, and when you got to the end of the year, you either had a 10% increase on income or you didn't have it. But you know, you can have that in the business sense of it, but in your journey, at any point in time, it's harder to measure that. I remember it in 2019 and 2020. I stopped doing it and I should go back to it. I remember sitting down around Christmas and writing up a list of all the accomplishments I had that year. And I was amazed because, you know, I've been berating myself that you talked about being the businessman, Mark. I berated myself for what I hadn't done, what I hadn't achieved. And yet I wrote a list of 10 or 12 things that not in my wildest dreams, 12, 18 months before that, particularly when I was in the bank, would I have ever dreamt I would achieve or do. You know, it's, and a lot of it can be put down to living life, having new experiences, getting outside your comfort zone and having experiences that you would never have had before, you know? So,
Michael, coming into landing here, and I'm sort of smiling to myself, Michael and I jumped on a call, sort of a provisional 20, 25 minute call to see what we might speak about. And I remember... when I brought forward the idea, Michael, if I remember well, it was like, Michael, you know, from the outside, what I was deeply and still am, maybe I'm still using the same words and you're going to call me out again. But what I said to you that day was along the lines of, Michael, I think like a core part of what you embody is like you're following your authentic truth, like you live authenticity as a way. And it's like from the outside, I love that. And I remember you called me out. It was like, I'm just figuring that shit out as I go along. It was along the lines like, I'm not living authentically. That's my I'm just like, I don't know who I am, but that's my process of, you know, I'm just one jigsaw piece at a time. I'm figuring who my authentic expression is. But if you were to playfully go with the word authenticity, I'm curious, because at the core, you know, in masculine feminine dynamics, I speak here a lot. At the core of the masculine drive is, you know, authentic freedom, authenticity. Have I been true to who I truly am as a man? whether you agree with me or not, I see that. It's a bit like the dominoes line up. You mightn't have had a due process of doing that, but I see that you weave that into the tapestry of your life, of your marriage, and you're having the courage to recommit to that process. Coming into landing, I'm curious, Michael, through your lived experience of, you know, figuring that shit out, you know, wave by wave, figuring and rediscovering who you authentically are. What does authenticity mean to you as a man?
You ask great questions, Mark. You know that.
It's the type of question, and I'm like, that's like an assassin attitude. You know, like five minutes coming into the landing, ask this like unanswerable question. You know, you could get the Dalai Lama, and like he'd still go, "Well, there's a book that I'm after giving you." So, Michael, you have like three. You have 3 minutes to answer this concisely. What does authenticity mean to you?
it is a great question, Mark. It's such a powerful question. I'm actually doing a workshop with Marion O'Brien, a coach in Galway, on the 30th of September. And the whole idea of authenticity is embedded in that workshop. But one of the things that has come up early on for me in my research for that is the distinction between authenticity and the essence of who we are. And even without thinking too much about it, I haven't bottomed out any thoughts on it. What comes to me is that authenticity is only part of it. I think the more we delve into who we are and our purpose in this world, the more it shows up that there's a deeper essence that goes way beyond authenticity for me. And that's the piece that excites me, but eludes me at the moment, to a large extent. It's that piece of what is the essence of me? What is the essence of what I'm about? And authenticity is part of it. Authenticity to me is around showing up with particular values or showing up in a particular way. But there's something beyond that that I'm still not able to articulate. And to be able to come from that place, because in a lot of ways, it's not, you know, as I say to my clients, it's abstract. It's a feeling. It's an energy. If we're able to tap into that more and more, well, then it's amazing what comes out of it. We talked about, and I know the, I don't want to go off in tangents with the question, but when we go back to commitment, at one stage in my career, I proposed building a hotel that was going to cost $24 million to put in place. I've never built a hotel in my life before. But the first three people that I spoke to about it were three people that I targeted to come on board and help me build it. One guy had built two hotels himself from scratch, and there were two profitable hotels in the country. And he not only said yes, but he put at disposal everything I needed to build that hotel. The other guy was in the mergers and acquisitions side of things. He was an accountant. He was a chief financial officer of big companies. He said, I'm on board. And I came away wondering, Mark, how does people like that say yes to a proposal like I gave them? It didn't make sense in the rational world. You know, we talked rational earlier. It didn't make sense in the rational world. It didn't make sense where I came from as a banker. Because when the hotel would be complete at a cost of, we say, 24 million plus, it would be valued at around half of that. So the economic sense didn't stack up either. But yet they all said yes. They all were on board. And at the end of the day, it was me that pulled the plug. And the reason I pulled the plug was I asked a different question of myself. I asked the question, am I prepared to give 15 to 20 years of my life to get this off the ground, up and running, established and trading? Because, the best case scenario was it'd take 10 years. But it could go 15, 20. Once you're committed, as we talked earlier, once you're committed, you're in. You don't just step out and say, I've done enough of this. You make sure it's a success. And the answer, the simple answer was no, I wasn't. And it was one of the most rational decisions I made for one of the most incredible ideas I've ever had. So I pulled out of it.
On that note, just
to close out on that, Mark,
yeah.
To me, that goes beyond everything we've talked about. It goes beyond commitment. It goes beyond authenticity. It goes deeper into the essence of what's within us. So I don't know whether I've answered the question or not.
Beautifully so. Because authenticity can be, it's like so many of these terms, can be chucked out there. It's very easy to say. But in actual fact, as you have invited us into your introspective journey with it, an inquiry, you know, on this, in this recording, it goes really deep. I'm hearing like this spiritual essence. It's like the road of authenticity. And what I love in your process and in your initial calling me out, going, that's not being authentic. That's like rediscovering. And I feel I'm getting more of the depth of inner juice of where that calling out was, which is there's this process of authenticity, but it's pointed to the deepest point of our essence, which it's that, it's like I feel you're coming into the landing here again, masculine, you know, the heroic husbands, be the husband she brags about. It's like it's that masculine journey of coming home bit by bit in a irrational, spiritual, energetic journey of rediscovering who we truly are, which you don't do in a day, you don't do in a 7-day retreat, you don't do because you became a coach, you don't arrive there just because you committed in marriage and do so every day. That's like that unnameable process. So
and it's great you say that, Mark, because I feel I'm discovering and rediscovering what you know, we, these words mean. You know, we talk about commitment as if it's, you know, bandied around in books and things like that. We talk about authenticity. I feel I'm still discovering and rediscovering them, all of them, in my life. And if I'm absolutely truthful, in commitment terms and authenticity terms, I probably regressed recently. And you've caught me at a juncture in my life where I'm catching myself again and saying, ooh, you know, is this what I'm going to settle for? And, you know, it's very interesting. This conversation or any of these conversations, they're so interesting from that point of view. It's like a writer putting his thoughts on or her thoughts on a page. Sometimes we put our thoughts on the page just to see what they read like. And then we can adjust them or throw them away and start again. But discovering ourselves or trying to get to know ourselves better and better and better. And that that process never ends.
Yeah. I love somebody reflected it back to me. It was something I read or live in conversation, but the link between authentic and author, it's the same root. So it's one of the same things. And coming into landing, Michael, I am beyond sure. I'm so satisfied in my entire nervous system and being that I called you, trusting my intuition. Was like, okay, Michael, I'll have an amazing conversation. I'm absolutely certain that many, many men listening in have felt in like I have, just the depth of honoring of your truth and the process and the courage to trust, you know, domino by domino, just the process of, hey, that feels right to follow. But also this simultaneous try to hold out from the beginning of the conversation to the very end, where it's like, hey, I'm under question always. There's another, you know, point in my life, and the willingness to courageously, first of all, speak that you're not on the podcast giving the persona of I've got all my shit sorted, which is true heart warriorship for me. So it's without doubt, Michael, many, many men listening into your story, you've lived it in marriage, in the beautiful container of marriage with four kids, with all the responsibilities, with double job, and you've lived it and you continue living that. The many guys are going to be deeply curious to follow up with you. Where can those guys find you online, Michael?
Well, the first stop is my website, Michael Hegarty Coaching. And I have a LinkedIn profile, Mark. And again, it comes under Michael Hegarty, or you can, you know, if you put in the LinkedIn and then add Michael Hegarty Coaching, it will take you there. And I have a Facebook page, but it's not as populous as the LinkedIn or the website. Anybody that's curious, I send them to the website first, because I've tried to put my story down on the website, what I'm about as a coach, even though that, you know, that, as you know, can change over the years. But it gives an insight into who I am and what I'm about. And obviously, get in touch directly, Michael Hegarty, mhegartycoaching @gmail.com will get me directly, or there's an email on the website equally.
Beautiful. Michael, it's been a rip-roaring ride. I've laughed, I've teared up. I have such a love for you as a man. Lots of guys I call in, you know, invite in. I don't have a backstory. It's been an honor and a privilege to work with you one-on-one, but more especially the one of deepest significance to me is to be able to call you a friend. You're a beautiful human being. You've just demonstrated to me from when I've met you first to the man that can show up today. First podcast under the belt. So I just hope my first podcast that I nailed it as good as you. Absolutely.
Well, Mark, can I hit the last word? So
go for it.
Because you know, I spoke earlier on about validation and the whole lot. And when we met, and you were obviously my first professional coach after coming out of coaching school, and wow, what a powerful coach. You really set the standard for me going forward. You gave me permission to be the man that I wanted to be and to be the coach that I wanted to be. And, you know, that can't be understated. And I know we had conversations about this before, but it still amazes me. And this is the bit about letting go and just allowing things to happen. When I went to the meeting, we won't give the context, but I was at a meeting in the Longford Arms, and you happened to do a motivational talk at that meeting. I wasn't expecting to meet you. I didn't know who you were at that stage. But when I heard you speak, I said I had to meet you. And, you know, that's the piece of letting go. It's trust in your instinct. I met in my business to meet you, and we got together, and the rest is history. You were my first coach, and we worked together, was it 6, 8, 9 months?
Yeah.
And, you know, talk about validation, Mark. You know, you showed me a different world, and you showed me what, you know, that I had permission to go there. So thank you very much for that. And thank you also for this opportunity. It's been a brilliant opportunity. I love the conversation, and can't wait to hear the podcast, because I can't remember a thing I said.
that's the true thing. In flow, we jumped into flow. It came true and real in the moment. We knew it was going to come like that. Michael, it's been a beautiful experience with you, as always, open-heartedly, completely receiving your love bomb there at the end, an affirmation, receiving that. And well, look, thank you for taking the baton of what was valuable in that and living in such an exceptionally courageous way. Thanks for coming on, Michael.
Thank you, Mark. All the best.
Guys listening in, what an example. One in a long list of incredible, beautiful, courageous heart warriors that we have on here at Be the Husband She Brags About. And it's like just coming into landing. Grab whatever insight in a long list of insights that Michael just wisdom bombed into the space there, from permission to act. Don't like just regret, act of not taking. Take that action and just know at the center of it all, from Michael's example, my example, and you know, David Aida, so provocatively annoying and irritating my nervous system. One of the core things is stop using your wife and kids as an excuse to not live out what Michael so beautifully says is what you're infinitely capable of. Let that come into your nervous system as, you know, it's your divine human right to live out that infinite capability. And your wife, your kids, and the world will be a better place as a result of that. You'll be a happier, more fulfilled man. I and Michael and every man in this movement couldn't wish more for you, brother, and your family. Ending with the mantra of our movement: better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day. And before you go, kingly brothers, I'm so happy to let you know that Heroic Husbands Men's Circles waiting list is now live. Online meetings supporting you up level to hero husband status. Go from fearing your best will never be good enough to becoming the competent and confident husband she brags about. Save years of needless guesswork and confidence eroding disconnection. Click on the link in the podcast description to take your first simple step to becoming the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. Check it out now.